Welcome to the Reach the Stars podcast, a collection of conversations with cool people who do cool things. Brought to you by Papercraft Miracles. Each week, we'll bring you inspiring stories of persistence, passion, and purpose. With your host, Jonna Willoughby-Lohr.
Welcome to the Reach the Stars podcast. This week's episode is going to be a little highlights reel from episodes 6 through 10. Episode 6, Compassion Over Fear with Adam Faulkner.
So the first one is, tell me about an experience from your life that shaped who you are today. Like one of those moments, like when you have one moment and you're like, wow, after that one experience, that one conversation, that one thing that happened, everything is different.
Let's see. Maybe. Okay. This will be a shout out to a teacher moment, which I always try to make my most formative moments involve, right? Maybe not formal teachers, but like the many, many teachers. We are who we are because somebody loved us in some way or another. I was lucky enough when I was a junior in high school to, I thought of writing in two completely separate ways, right? Like one was the writing you did for school. It was like the grades driven, academically oriented, get into a college, make my mother not like weep type shit, right? The other writing was music and musicality. And music probably was my very first literacy as a kid. I hated reading. I grew up like singing and all kinds of choirs. I was a musical theater kid. And then when I started really engaging, for better and for worse, which is like all up and down this book, in Black culture and Black politics, my sort of musicality, curiosity shifted toward hip hop. And so much of the like music and work and sort of poetry and language that I was using was a kind of thing that didn't feel reserved for school. So I was writing like verses and 16 bar verses on like napkins or the backs of magazines and sharing them with friends. And it just didn't, it never occurred to me that those two things would ever intersect in a school-based space. Mm-hmm. And I had a teacher when I was a junior in high school who, same teacher that folks like Angel Nafis and Lauren Whitehead, both dear comrades of mine, would have also had. His name is Jeff Cass, who was very aware that I was creating things that were not what I was sort of like showing him. And he said, if you are creating things that like make you feel alive and that make you feel excited, you need to be turning those into me. And I said, well, that's like not what these assignments are. Your syllabus doesn't say shit about what I'm creating. And he's like, I don't mind. I don't care. If you are writing and creating stuff outside my class that feels valuable to you, I will give you a grade for it. And that idea, both that like my life could be academic subject matter worthy of exploring in school, and that teachers and mentors had the capacity to completely throw out with the bathwater a curriculum if it felt like a young person was like motivated and excited about a pursuit of themselves was revolutionary for me, right? It obviously catapulted me into a career as a writer, one that really like centered around narrative and storytelling and self-investigation. But it also really, I think, ignited a fire in me for education, because it was one of the first teachers that I had that made me feel like who I was legitimately enough. Like all of the strange, broken, disparate, separate parts of myself. While I was busy, like being a really closeted queer kid in the Midwest, like being a varsity athlete and a musical theater kid and like not letting those two groups meet ever, right? Just like splitting myself in as many ways as I could. A teacher that said, all of those things are exactly who you are. You should use my classroom as a space to unpack them, address them, and talk about them, and I will give you a grade. And that pedagogy became the thing that underscored my desire to teach, that underscored my desire to want to have hard conversations with corporate America, that underscored my pursuit of a PhD, that underscored my desire to want to write books. So I'm grateful for that moment and that teacher. His name is Jeff Cass.
I love it because my junior year English teacher also encouraged me to, you can probably start hearing my kids clomping around upstairs in this recording. She encouraged me to give her the poems that I had been writing outside of the class. And I even still have a folder of all of those poems that I gave her and her notes and comments on them. And it was really validating to have a teacher take the time out and say, like, tell me about what's important to you in your life and to actually care what I was going to say. And I told Carlos about this too in our interview, that my very first experience as being a teaching artist, I had no teaching experience. I did not have a degree in that at all. And the only thing that I could do to kind of get my students to do anything on the first day, I was like, I don't know what to have them write about. So I said, write me a piece of writing. Could be a poem or a story or a rhyme or whatever. Tell me about what's important to you.
Oh, mommy's in an interview.
This is real life right now that my kids are in here now. All right, come on over.
Mommy's walking.
Real quick. Come and say hi. And then you gotta go away.
Come say what's up. Meet me.
Go say.
Hey. Hi there.
Yeah, can you say what your name is? He can't see you over there, Goofball. Come over here.
Can you see me? I'm waving at you, little guy.
Say hi. This is third. This is third.
Oh, and there's another.
And that's Vernon.
What are your names again? Sorry.
That's Vernon, and this is Thurgood.
Thurgood.
Yep.
Great names.
Yep. Yeah.
You guys have good names.
I gave them little old man names.
That's my grandfather's name.
Yeah, it's every time you meet somebody, somebody says that's my grandfather's name, or I have an Uncle Vernon, you know. And, and then when people meet Thurgood, and he goes, I Thurgood, you know. And I'm like, yep. Every time you Google your name forever, you're gonna come up with someone that's not you.
Thurgood and Vernon, how are you guys? How are you guys doing today?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kids. Doing all right.
You're so weird on camera all the time.
It's all right. It's Friday. We're supposed to be zany. I like that outfit a lot.
Yeah, we got a lot of superheroes up in here. We got to fix my backdrop. You can't push it. Oh, my goodness.
What's that?
Yeah. Are you guys going to be quiet for a couple minutes so I can finish this? Yeah. No, it's totally fine. I mean, it's funny because I interviewed another mompreneur the other day, and the whole entire interview, her kid is like in the screen, like yelling.
Oh my God, are you kidding? Like all bets are off. Like, first of all, this should be the only way we ever work, right? It's not that crazy. It's not that serious. But also, truly, all bets are off. The more the merrier.
Oh goodness, what'd you do? Oh, no, no, there's no crying in podcasts. Hold on a second. Seriously, that's totally like my real life, you know? And she was like, are you sure you don't care that my kid's in the video? I'm like, that's your real life. Like, that's how you work all day. And I have no problem with people seeing, like, you know.
This is how this goes. This is how it is.
Exactly. And, you know, I might not even edit that out. Whatever.
I hope you don't. I'll be offended if you do.
You know, I'll be like, that's real life. You know, like, you're going to listen to my podcast and you're going to hear my kid crying in the middle of it because that's my real life, you know, and,
yep.
You know, we can't edit everything. So anyway, number two, number two on the list.
What else?
When you feel defeated or overcome, what do you tell yourself to keep going?
I have a bit of a mantra that I repeat to myself. I picked up like a real, well, I think the thing I first tell myself is like, how can I be active? How can I like go outside, go for a run? How can I sweat? But a mantra that I repeat to myself through some meditation that I've like really engaged in over the course of the last couple years is, let's see if I can remember it. I love it because it always like, it takes me a moment while I'm like sitting and breathing to center on it. But it is, let's see, courage over intellect, compassion over fear, and what's the third one? I forget the third one, but usually courage over intellect and then compassion over fear. And there's a third C and I'm not recalling it right now, but it's repeating those things to myself again and again and again and again, because when I am scared, or when I'm just feeling depleted or against the wall, like I'm usually fairly unkind to myself. Mm-hmm. That's where the compassion over fear comes in. And I often think that intellectualism or like big wordism or like it's sort of like a castle for smart people to hide in and protect themselves from feeling things. And I think that that's really easy to go to for me. So I remind myself that like the answer to whatever I'm feeling is not being able to describe it or articulate it or talk through it or weave a narrative out of it or create a piece of art out of it. It's just that like courage is more important than that. And being able to like name and dress language up around something is not courage. It's just an exercise that makes me feel less afraid. So those two things are powerful. I wish I had the third one.
You can always send it to me. I can put it in the show notes and then be like, cool. Everyone should zone in
correct.
On that.
Correct. Got it. All right. I'll send it to you.
All right. So number three, tell me about a way that you overcame a failure or a mistake and what you learned from it.
Oh my God. One time when, I mean, this isn't really a failure, but it is a childhood memory. I dumped an entire very, very hot bowl of spaghetti on my head and had to go to the hospital. I like reached up and an entire boiling bucket of water with pasta in it, pulled it right down on my head while my mother was cooking. And very few breakthroughs, very few like developmental breakthroughs on the other side of that experience, on the other side of the like hospital bill that I bestowed onto my mother, other than I should just like listen to her with a little more like attention and gravity. And I still have the burns on my back to like prove it.
Oh, man. That's one way to learn, like, don't touch the stove. You're like, yeah. Really?
Got it.
Awesome. Yes, for sure. I'll have to play that part for my kids and be like, yes, no, don't do it. Okay, number four, what one trait or habit is most responsible for keeping you on track?
Trait or habit for keeping me on track? I think surrounding myself with people maybe that's it, like surrounding myself with the right people, making sure that the right people are in my life. They're people that both call me on my shit but are also really, really quick to remind me that I'm good at stuff, that I'm kind and thoughtful. I take really seriously the idea that like blood and family and lineage is like kind of a chosen thing. and the community of beloveds that I have like been fortunate enough to like populate my life with. Mm-hmm. I'm going to know them when I'm 70. And I've like never been clearer on that. You know, of course it's a rotating door. People come and people go, but I'm a pretty social being, and the degree, and this maybe is kindred to our first conversation before we started recording about like some of those early slam relationships, right? People like Carlos, people whose lives I'll be in for a very, 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 very long time that I trust both as like intimate friends, as well as thought partners and co-conspirators and fellow makers of stuff and collaborators, but also people who are like really unafraid to tell me about me, to whom I will listen.
Mm-hmm. I love this show. Oh my God. I love it. This is like, oh, I've wanted to have a podcast for such a long time. Because I know that at my core, like the thing I'm most interested in life, is the power of a single moment or a single conversation to change someone forever. Mm-hmm. A single interaction can just like totally change who you are and it'll stay with you. And, I know that I personally have had so many of those with just so many amazing people. And I'm just so excited to have a space for those moments to live.
It's wonderful that you've created it. And I mean, you're clearly, you're a skilled space maker and holder. And yeah, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for including me in this growing idea. You're clearly cut out to do it quite well.
Well, I mean, I was funny because in the other, this is my third episode I've recorded today. So if for anyone noticing, I'm wearing the same shirt, as I was in the other two. But I definitely have always had many focuses in my life, which is part of the reason that I've been sort of kind of growing 3 to 5 different businesses at the same time. Obviously, like I've been a poet. I started writing when I was like 5 years old, and was performing at 12 and started playing music when I was in college. So I had like my poetry thing. I did like the capital P at the poetry readings, and then I did the slam poetry, and then I'm an MC, and I played music solo for a really long time. And I've been in a band with my husband and a bunch of other guys since 2008, and, you know, play music and sing and rap and play the trumpet in the band and like have that kind of stage persona, and have been in the process of writing like 12 books, none of which are finished. And then running my business.
Right.
I was 19 years old. So
you're a multitasker.
I am. So it's great to finally make space in my creative zone to do this podcast. And I think it's kind of ends up that it's going to be the little link that really holds all of those different facets together, to kind of give a space for all those experiences, like people I met through business and other artists and writers and musicians and performers and change makers, like a space for, the importance of those relationships to have a space to hang
out. I really resonate with that, as someone whose life has been sort of peppered across industries and spaces, for a long time. Like how increasingly careful or at least attentive I am becoming to like new opportunities that I say yes to, because the things I want to be doing pretty much from here on out are things that serve as like a pinching tool for all of my like respective worlds and spaces. Because as I'm sure you really know, it's really easy to feel like you're diluting yourself by running from thing to 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 thing. Meanwhile, like, you know, friends and colleagues and family members like chose a thing and that's it. That's what they do. That's how they operate and evolve in the world. And I knew that would never be me, but I also know that it can feel really like depleting, or like you're watering yourself down. Mm-hmm. So I think the idea of, and I mean, in some ways that's what the book has done, right? It is like, created a way for the various selves that we've like been giving ourselves to, the spaces we've been doling out our energies for years, to kind of like come together in a single artifact or space. And that can be very cathartic in some important ways, especially for those of us that are running around doing a lot. So I'm delighted to hear that this meets that need for you, because I wish that. I wish that for folks that have the courage to take on multiple things at once simultaneously, and to have families and to be busy and working in the world. I wish that, because I think it's really important to be able to have things that contain the entirety of us. And if this is that, then I'm even more honored to be here.
Yeah. It's been really cool. And there's just been so many kind of weird little serendipitous things that, like, I'm having conversations with all these people, but like, there's things that you're saying that are connecting to things that the person in the interview right before you was talking about, even though you weren't there. And like that energy, like obviously the energy goes into me and then the energy goes out to you. And that even though we are having these conversations in a virtual space, in a digital space, that the energy still transfers. I mean, just, you know, when you hear someone performing poetry or performing music on YouTube or on a CD, and that you get goosebumps because the energy that they are throwing out there is like still able to come through something that's not tangible. I think that is so cool. I mean, right. Just like,
that's it. That's it.
As long as you put it out there that people can receive it. And cool, all right? This has been as a perfectionist type of person. I worked with a coach last year. She actually just interviewed her yesterday. But she's really has worked with me on the mantra of done is better than perfect. So, I'm hopeful that people will, forgive the imperfect nature of these conversations, and that sometimes people's video is kind of funky and sometimes the audio is a little funky, because that's just the world we live in these days.
That's a brave new world. That's all.
You can't sit on a couch with people, but it also gives me the opportunity to like talk to you in New York City while I'm sitting here in my office in Buffalo and my employees are making paper right underneath me. Like, it's so cool.
There you go.
Last question before you run away. What is the best piece of advice you've ever gotten? And what advice would you give to other people?
Oh boy. The best piece of advice I've ever gotten. The best piece of advice. This isn't advice, but it is, it's a reminder. And I guess it's that I am enough. I'm enough. I think, I don't know if like Carlos is very present because you brought him up or because I'm about to get on a call with him in 15 minutes. but it's certainly like top of mind for me. And one of the things that he often talks about, or I talk about with he and his family often, is like how much of our work as educators and as artists is really like in pursuit of that constant reminder, both to ourselves and to other people we work with, right? Mm-hmm. It's like really what we're doing out here is like traveling from place to place to place to remind ourselves that like we're enough, but also to remind the people we love that like whoever you are and however you're showing up, if you're taking care of the people you love, if you're trying to like undo the violence of our inheritances and undo the violence of our histories, you're enough. There's no right or wrong way to be doing that. And I don't know, you know, I'm not one for necessarily like giving advice to others, but I think in that same vein, right? Like making sure that folks understand that their multiple selves and the multitudes that we contain are assets, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy to think that like to be more of one thing, you got to be less of another, especially professionally speaking. But I think it's true intimately and interpersonally too. to be more of X, you got to be less of Y. At some point in your life, you got to make choices about how you spend your time and your money and your resources and your labor, and all that shit is true. You need to be careful. You need to protect yourself. But being, you know, tending to and gardening multiple selves simultaneously just makes you bigger. It makes you more. And I think increasingly the way the world is like shifting, we need people who are not just one thing, but who are conscious about how to be and how to show up for multiple people in multiple spaces. And I think that that's a particular trait that like queer people champion more than others, which is why I deeply, deeply love my queer family. But I also think that that is not a thing that is reserved for. I just think it's a skill that like queer folks develop. We wake up in the world and we're like, oh shit, all those different selves that I've been like trying to convince myself are like wrong. Mm-hmm. If I could just like wake up and acknowledge that they are all me and I am better and richer for embracing each one of them in this container, in this podcast, in this book, mm-hmm. then that's really powerful. And I think we spend a lot of time convincing ourselves and losing sleep and energy and self-love over trying to minimize the different parts of ourselves that are less palatable to like someone's expectations. And any effort to do that, or any effort to reject that rather, and celebrate your multitudes is something I am here for.
I love that. It's funny because more serendipity. Part of the urgency to start doing this podcast right now and just be like, get it out there, comes from watching Nico Tortorella's Instagram live show that they have been doing during the pandemic. It's called The Space Between, but they wrote this poetry book called All of It Is You. And I just love that, like, the last thing you're talking about kind of like ties into that, that like all of the parts of yourself are you and you should love them.
Yeah.
Episode 7, Far Greater Things with Nancy Eckerson.
The first one, which I'm pretty sure you already answered, but you can pick a different one, is tell me about an experience that shaped who you are today. Like one of those, like, because that one moment happened, bink, things are different.
Okay. Okay, I can tell you what mine was. I started writing for the Buffalo News and they asked me to do a feature on fear of flying. So in order to do that, I had to go out and interview some people. And one of the women that I interviewed said, you know what? She said, I know what would help you a lot. There's a tape that a doctor made for me. But then he also told me to go to this place called the Meeting House in Williamsville every Wednesday night. Every first Wednesday night. And there's a group there that will help you learn how to meditate. So I was scared to death. I'd always heard that meditation was like, you know, woo-woo stuff and you don't do that and this and that. But I was intrigued too, because I've always been intrigued about all these things. So I decided, well, it's part of my assignment. I guess I can go, right?
Yeah.
So I went to this thing. That was the day that changed my life completely. I meditated and I went straight to the angelic plane the very first night. And I knew, this is why I've been so different all my life. This is where I'm meant to be.
That's awesome.
And that was the start of all this.
That's so cool. Oh, I love it. Okay. So
thank you.
Number two, when you feel defeated or overcome, what do you tell yourself to keep going?
There's a lesson in this. I always tell myself that, and I always find it.
You know? Oh my God. Remind me someday that I have to tell you about the, there's a lesson in this story.
Okay.
So number three, tell me about a way that you overcame a failure or a mistake and what you learned from it.
Okay. I guess I kind of feel that way about, this is big time stuff. I can't believe I'm saying this. I feel that way about divorcing, that I had been married for 24 years when I finally decided, no, I'm no longer me. I have to get out on my own and do this somehow. I had no job and I had a lot of panic disorder and I still had to do it. And it was really by faith alone that I got anything done, because, I mean, who could possibly go out on their own without a job and with scared to death to be alone? Mm-hmm. And I did it, and I was walked through every day, every step of the way, by these really crazy, super weird shit things you're talking about. That's yeah. just what happened on every day. Matter of fact, I have my first short story I ever wrote was called The Nightlight. And it was about what guided me through this whole thing was I had this broken old nightlight in my old house. And the first day I was alone all by myself after the divorce, that nightlight started blinking. Well, it hadn't blinked in about 3 years. But I just hadn't bothered taking it out of the plug. And it blinked all the way through till I went to sleep. When I woke up in the morning, it wasn't blinking anymore. The next night I got up to my bedroom and I was scared, still scared, and crying because I didn't know how I was going to get through all this. And I go lay down and the thing starts blinking again. And it's blinking and it's blinking and it's blinking. And I'm watching this thing, you know, with my eyes wide open as much as I can until I fall asleep. And next morning I woke up and I said, geez, I made it through a second night. Well, this happened every single night until I became so sure I was going to see it that I wasn't afraid to go upstairs anymore. But I would still see it. And then one day my brother came to visit me and it was crazy. We got upstairs. It was the middle of the daytime and this thing went nuts. It's blinking like crazy and blinking like crazy. And I knew why, because the night before, a couple nights before, I had fallen right near this thing and I looked at it very closely. And it was a tall angel and a short angel. The tall angel was like a light brunette colored hair and the small angel was blonde. It was my mother and I. And one of my mother's favorite people on earth was my little brother. So when he came to visit, it was like, wong, 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 wong. She was seeing us both. So I knew that's what that was about.
That is so cool. I love it. Oh my goodness. Okay, number four. What one trait or habit is most responsible for keeping you on track?
Meditation. No doubt. No doubt about it.
Okay, number five. What's the best piece of advice that you've ever gotten, and what advice would you give to others?
Okay, best piece of advice I've ever gotten. Oh, I'm not sure if I'm going to come up with one really fast or that I've ever given. I guess that I've ever gotten is it's kind of tied up in this quote that I use all the time now. Mm-hmm. It's like, so tell me, what do you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? So that's what I tell people to think about now. That to me is like giving advice, because I don't actually give them advice. I give them the thought that'll lead them to what they want to do. So that's how I look at advice, I guess.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Thanks. Yeah. Aww. That's by Mary Oliver. It was in a poem she wrote.
I love Mary Oliver. My friend who's also been interviewed on here, she's a yoga teacher and she often starts her class reading some Mary Oliver. It's really great.
Yep. I love Mary Oliver. Mary Oliver and Rumi are like on a par for me.
Rumi. I have
my people.
I have
they're my people.
The Rumi yeah. book on my nightstand. Yeah.
I love it.
Episode 8. Hope is an act of will with Jay Wechselbaum.
Number one, tell me about an experience that shaped who you are today.
Wow. Well, I guess I'm going to take this opportunity to talk about my dad, who passed away unexpectedly on New Year's Day. And he's a wonderful guy. I never thought I would be in film. Or my dad was an actor. He's on General Hospital for a decade. He was in various films, and just such a wonderful, tolerant, open-minded, just generous, warm guy. And I know we talk. We you know, he was my dad, and I'm biased, but when we had a memorial service, it was standing room only. It was just incredible. So he's touched so many people's lives. Such a wonderful guy. I'm wearing his hat right now that he wore when he directed. He did a lot of theater stuff later in life, and big influence on me. And so I've been trying to carry him forward, not just by trying to be a role model for warmth and generosity and tolerance is my own imperfect ways, but also to carry his vision, to carry him forward, to make something really cool for television and film, because I know he would appreciate that.
Oh, that's
awesome. It's a big influence on me. I was supposed to name five things.
Wait, no, there's five questions. There's five different questions.
Okay.
It's kind of like a job interview. Okay. Number two, when you feel defeated or overcome, what do you tell yourself to keep going?
Oh boy. That's tough. I mean, that you have value, that you matter, that people care about you, you've done important things, and you're going to do more things. I think everybody matters, and everybody can tell themselves they have value and help pick themselves up, and that's really hard emotional work to do. I mean, my mom has abandoned me, and it's very, very hard to feel like you have value when something like that happens to you. I wrote an essay about it. It's called "Trump Stole My Mom." You can check it out. But that's not just self-promotion. That's like, you can see where I'm coming from and what the struggle, even with somebody. I mean, I've done a lot of things, but you know, you don't necessarily feel those things. So you have to get into the practice of making sure you're checking in with yourself and knowing that you matter and then you have value, and that can help build the momentum to get up and go forward. I've faced a lot of setbacks in my life. And I've been very fortunate in a lot of ways, but still, you know, so you get in the practice of telling yourself that you have value is really, really important. Don't take that feedback just externally. It needs to come from inside.
I'm going to like make a compilation video of everyone's answers to each of these questions. Because they're all so different. It's been really interesting hearing what everybody has, all these different techniques. I think it's great. Number three, tell me about a way that you overcame a failure or a mistake and what you learned from it.
Made a lot of mistakes. Overcame. Well, I mean, mistakes are the greatest teachers, really. I mean, you know, if you really screw up bad that's the thing you think about, like when you're in the shower or when you're laying in bed at night, it's like, take that opportunity to learn that lesson. And, it's funny, you know, you think you've learned a lot and you're in a good place. And then, you know, it's like 5 years later, you're like, oh gosh, who is that guy? You know, they have a lot to learn. Thinking about mistakes and what you could have done differently and how you could have been better for yourself and for people around you. Instead of turning it into a self-judgment, you know, in my better moments, it's more like, when that happens again, gonna do something different. I'm gonna pledge to do it better. So
yeah. Awesome. Okay. Number four. What one trait or habit is most responsible for keeping you on track?
This is a challenging one, especially for writers. I am very, very, very distractible, and it's very hard, especially these days. It's hard to be burned out, get the bandwidth. And what I've noticed is to do all the really big projects and all the writing and dissertating and things I've done is do a little bit every day and build that momentum. If you do a little bit, like if writing projects, like sometimes I schedule when I have a big writing project, the first step is just start, you know, like whether it's a sentence on a page or a word, or, you know, because you just keep pushing that. And then sometimes the second hardest part is to start again the next day, and the next day was, you know, so I'm working. Yeah. I've got these two jobs and this project, and it's a lot. And this is a very difficult time to have motivation to do anything. And, but I feel like I've done what I need to do. If I pushed each one of those things forward, at least a little bit every day, because momentum is a thing, and stagnation, the opposite of momentum, is a thing. And it's like, if you can build that momentum by just pushing things forward, you can look back like a month, you know, a month in the past and be like, if I did something a little bit, if 30 times in 30 days, you did a lot, you know, and then that you could, that helps to do more. I mean, not always, but it's really the best I got, you know. It's just keep pushing things forward, even if it's, you know, and I break things, I do to-do lists, you know, sometimes I'm better and sometimes not, but it's like, it helps me keep track. It's like, I scratch that off, to-do lists for a day, to-do lists for a week, to-do lists a month, year. I'm like, you know, sometimes just doing the to-do list is that first thing on your to-do list, you know, when you can't get out of bed, you know, it's like, even that can help. Build, because momentum's all emotional, right? It's mm-hmm. a battle, and there are constraints, physical constraints, but I mean, like, that's really it. So little bits every day.
I mean, it's physics, right? You know, an object in motion will remain in motion, an object at rest will remain at rest. And I'm pretty sure that's like my entire adult life is just like, you know, like,
yeah, you know,
me, I'm always just like, oh, I can do that. Let's add that to the fire. Like,
I mean, I feel like I'm, you know, I'm saying, you know, things that many people already know. It's just like, it bears repeating, and we remind ourselves, you know.
Yeah, I mean, people may know them, but a lot of times telling yourself something in your head and hearing somebody else say it is totally different.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. So that's what therapists are for, right?
Exactly. So I'm hopeful that my podcast obviously is not therapy for people, but that it can be a space for inspiration and a space for hope to happen. So I'm really glad that you talked about how important that is. Because I think everyone that I have interviewed so far, I mean, obviously everyone has hard times in their lives, but I think everyone has talked about this horrible, hard thing happened to me and then what, and talked about what they learned from it and how that has helped to inform their current perspective on the world. And I just think that ability to learn from and to change your perspective on tough times is the reason that our society can keep going through anything. Anyway, that was kind of deep. Number five, what's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten, and what advice would you give to other people?
Oh, man. I've had so many great mentors, Peter Kuznick included, still love you. Had so many great mentors in my life, scholars, creative people that inspire me, gosh. And of course, it's easy for me to think about my dad a lot these days. You know, the first thing that came to my mind is my dad would say to me, you know, various trials in my life, hard times, he would say, you know, Jay, ride the horse in the direction it's going, which is kind of a perfect segue or related to the thing we were just talking about is, you know, you kind of trust your instincts, go look at what's happening around you and push. If you feel like you're constantly pushing against, that's usually a sign that you need to reevaluate and maybe pivot. I mean, there's going with the flow, and sometimes, you know, that can take away your agency or make you feel like you don't have it. That's not good. But we should really think about where things are going and try to be the best we can be in that context, you know? So ride the horse in the direction it's going, you know, that's something I think about a lot when I feel like I'm tilting at windmills in my life.
That's awesome. So it's just reminding me of something that I definitely want to do with this podcast. So once the first episodes are released, so by the time somebody's watching this, there have been several other episodes released, but I want to have the listeners / viewers, because there'll be audio and video of this. I want to have people send in what their favorite quote is from each episode. And then whichever one gets the most votes, then we're going to make some merch, with the quotes, and, then we'll split the merch between the podcast and the guest who came up with the idea. So that's the plan. So I think that, your quote is definitely up there in my book as my favorite one, right? The horse and the direction it's going. So hopefully there'll be like stickers and t-shirts and whatnot that says it, like, you know, and, we'll see what happens in the future, but I'm excited for, collaboration and just more things to happen from this. So
episode 9, superhero state of mind with Lionel Nazario.
The first question is, tell me about an experience that shaped who you are today.
Wow. Okay. I got one for you. And I know you know this one, but let's throw it out here because it's fun and it definitely is an appropriate answer to your question. So once upon a time when I was 17, I decided, and mind you, this is in hyper rural upstate New York, I decided that it would be a good idea to hang out with a friend of mine and get blind drunk and then sit by the side of a road. Now, I say a road, you know, people think of a road and they imagine cars and lights. Talking about a road out in the middle of nowhere. There's a cow pasture over here and there's a cow pasture over there. I decided that it would be a good idea to hang out by the road with my friend and just drink ourselves stupid to the point where we both passed out in the road. The one car that came down that road all night long managed to run me over. And it broke my ankle and it took a chunk of skin out of the back of my other leg and stuff like that. It messed me up pretty good, but thank God, you know, nothing over my head or, you know, whatever the place may, you know, case may be. Long story short, how did that benefit me and what did that do for me and make me what I am? Well, it was an enormous wake-up call. Number one, you could be dead right now, so you should make every other day after this count for something. Number two, drinking a lot of alcohol is a guaranteed ticket to stupid events in life. It's going to look different depending on who you are. But for me, it looked like a pair of taillights moving off into the distance while I wake up in the road all busted up. So what I got out of that was, don't drink yourself stupid. And I never have since.
Yeah. Also gave you 6 screws, 2 pins, and a plate in your leg.
That's right. You got it. Good memory.
Protectors forever and ever. Yeah. Okay, number 2, when you feel defeated or overcome, what do you tell yourself to keep going?
Well, that's a dang good question.
Thank you.
I don't feel that way very often, but if I think that back to the last major challenge that I had, which caused me to bump up against those feelings, I would say that it is my awareness of time that helps me to put it in perspective. And what I tell myself is, this too shall pass. Now, maybe not in those exact words, but that's what it boils down to. You know, without getting into it, you know, I remember when I was dealing with a legal issue that was really challenging. You know, it occurred to me as I'm agonizing over all this, I was like, one day, these lawyers, one day soon, actually, because they're old and not in very good condition, one day soon, these lawyers are going to be dead, and I'm still going to be alive, looking and sounding fabulous. So that put a smile on my face. And then I also thought to myself, the thing that I'm concerned about losing, I'm not actually going to lose. I may have to do without it temporarily, but inevitably, I get that back. Mm-hmm. So I think that time, you know, recognizing that everything in time will pass, that's what helps me to pull back from the brink. Yeah.
Okay. So we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but tell me about a way that you overcame a failure or a mistake and what you learned from it. Total job.
Well, yeah. I mean, I could come at that one a lot of different ways, but you know, let me make a parenting example out of this. you know, once upon a time I was at, you know, asking my son to do something that was just a little bit beyond his abilities. And, but you know, he's a smart kid. I forget how old he was. This is a few years ago. I want to say he was 8 at the time, but I think I had like 14-year-old expectations for him because he's so smart. He's also kind of a big kid for his age too. And then I kind of caught myself a couple of minutes after I'd gotten done being like, rah, rah, and I was like, oh man, this is not right. This is not fair. Like, you know, I'm probably not making him feel very good right now. And there's no need for this. Like, hello, you forget that he's 8 years old. So I just immediately recognized my mistake, and I went to the person whom I had wronged, that being my, you know, at the time, 8-year-old son. And I just apologized to him. Like, you know what, man, I'm really, really sorry. Like, I screwed up that. I shouldn't have done that. I think I got that attitude from my father, and I don't want to do that to you. So I'm sorry. This is where that comes from. Yeah, we'll talk about this later. So, you know, that's one way where I go about, you know, trying to overcome, you know, imperfections, right?
I do love that there's a little mini you running around there in the world. It's great.
Well, hopefully wiser, but yes.
I feel that having my oldest kid is like hella smart, like has always, since the minute he came out, like you could see it in his face that he like understood things that a newborn baby would not get. Like you could tell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely, there's a lot of times where I'm like, in my head, I have this inner dialogue that obviously I, you know, got from my parents. It's like, damn it, kid. Like, why don't you get not to do that? Or why did you do that? And I'm like, he's 4.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Like, expecting him to have like emotional intelligence and to be able to control his emotions in ways that most adults can't do. And I'm like, wait. Like, he may know the names of like all the reptiles in the entire world, but like, he doesn't have that emotional maturity, and most people will probably never have that. And so it's definitely a good reminder to give people more grace than we usually do.
Absolutely. No, well said. Absolutely.
Number 4, what one trait or habit is most responsible for keeping you on track?
These are great questions, John. I'm glad you asked them to people. Seriously. Speaking for myself, I think that it is, I'm a man of principle. I'll do things that don't necessarily benefit me personally because I want to uphold a principle. For better or for worse, you know, I see something going down on the subway. I mean, I remember one time, you know, this guy come through the, you know, where the train cars connect, you know, you walk through the doors. He comes through the train cars, had his penis out. And you know, there was a woman and her kid, no joke, and there was a woman and her kid sitting there. She's like, oh my God, like covering his kid, you know. I had to get involved. It obviously didn't benefit me in any way. I mean, that, you know, that's not really something that I want to deal with, quite frankly, but it needed to be dealt with. And so, you know, so things like that, you know, matters of principle. So I think that being principled and being willing to inconvenience myself or, you know, take a risk to uphold principles that I think are important, you know, such as law and order and decency, right? You know, just to reference that situation we were just talking about. I think that really is one of the things, because that desire to uphold principle and live in a principled manner keeps me from doing all kinds of things that I might otherwise do. Like, you know, I could be an evil genius, you know, like I have definitely mapped out how to rob this and kill that and do all of these different things in my younger years. And you know, when I always came to a place where I was like, you can't do that. That would be so wrong. And, you know, so that's the end of it. So yeah, I think being principled is really what has kept me from crossing the line. Yep. Time and again.
I love how different everyone's answers to this are, because some people are like, oh, I make to-do lists every day, and you're like, I just make a conscious choice not to rob banks.
Basically, yeah. Or, but you know what I mean, not to be choppy to people. No, you know what I mean, like, you're right, rob banks, absolutely, let's not do that. And then all the way down here, like, let's not get on this person's case for being stupid. They may have been born that way. You know what I mean? Like simple stuff, all full spectrum. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Number five, the last question. What's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten? And what advice would you give other people?
Wow. Oh my, that is a beast. That is a beast. Well, I could say that one of the best pieces of advice that I ever got was to, always be true to yourself. And I know that's not very original, but I think good advice is, you tend to hear it in multiple places because it's good advice, right? I think be true to yourself is really important. The things that I do to make a living nowadays, if you want to call it that, I mean, I do them because I want to do them. There's a lot of other things I could be doing just to make money, but that's not how I want to operate because I'm keenly aware that although I expect to live a long time, there's going to come a day where, I'm done and I'll be fertilizer. And I want the days between now and then to be lived on my terms. So I think it's very important people be true to themselves. No one ever was laying on their deathbed like, oh God, I should have spent more time at the office. That has never happened. You know what I mean? So make sure that you're living life on your terms. I think it's super duper important, whatever that means for you. And then advice that I would give to people outside of that, honestly, learn law. And what I mean is not become a lawyer, learn about law, learn about common law, learn about American jurisprudence, learn how to read and understand these different documents, learn the words involved. I love this country. It's not a democracy. It was never supposed to be a democracy. It's a republic. It's a republic. I know that we hear everyone on television using the word democracy, but I promise it's a republic. So, little things that we just don't know. This is how, over the course of decades, we get to a place where the authorities, from the police to the president, are doing their own thing. And we don't even know how to straighten it out because we don't know what straight is in terms of law. So that would be my advice. Learn law.
Episode 10, Own the Suck with Nicole Overcamp.
The first question is, tell me about an experience that shaped who you are today.
So I actually kind of answered this, but the experience that shaped who I am today was really the accident, honestly. It really made me redefine life. How I thought about things, how I did things, what I value most in the time that I spend with people in general and in the relationships that I have and just how I operate as whole. Like now my life is this holistic blend of harmony where I'm showing up at home the same way I'm showing up at work or going out with friends. Like it's all the same person and it's in complete alignment. And so the unfortunately the most tragic thing that ever happened to me was also the thing that really shaped me into who I am right now.
For sure. I feel that with mad tragedy up in this world for a while. Number two, when you feel defeated or overcome, what do you tell yourself to keep going?
Well, it's just a season. Like I will either say this is just a season, a moment, or I try to think of my why. Okay. So, if it's something that's really difficult, and a great example of that is COVID, like this has been horrible in so many ways and it's really pushed me mentally. And I keep telling myself and my clients for that matter, like this is just a season of life. It's bad right now, but it will get better. Everything always has its seasons. And if it's just a bad day, I focus on my why, like why I do this, why I show up. And it helps me to put things in perspective. Like, I get the opportunity to have these bad days. I don't have to have bad days. Right. And for me, I try to take all of those experiences, be it bad days, failures, or what have you, and just turn them into like these little mini lessons. And that really helps me get through all the bad stuff, like because it happens and it's going to keep happening, right?
Exactly. Okay. Number three, tell me about a way that you overcame a failure or a mistake and what you learned from it.
So I've failed and made mistakes a bazillion times. And how I overcome them for me is a little bit of a process. So if there's something I like fail out at or make a mistake, and sometimes like for if it's with a client, for example, like if there's something I missed or I didn't do correctly, I will like dwell on it for a day or two. Like it will eat me up inside and I'll dwell on it and I'll talk to Sarah about it to nauseam, and she probably wants to strangle me every single time, because like I'll run stories in my head like over and over again, and then I face it head on. Like if it's something I did wrong, because I'm human and I do, like I will literally email the person and say I did this wrong or I messed up, here's how we're going to fix it. And it took me a long time actually to get to that point where I could just like openly admit it without like feeling like I had to come up with an excuse. Because how easy is it to just play defense, you know? And so it's taking ownership completely of the things that I realized maybe I didn't do correctly or I did wrong or I could have done better, you know? And even if there's times where like I didn't necessarily do something wrong, but I found I could have done it better, I own it. I own it and I like attack it head on after thinking about it for a long time. Like I try to take a day to think and make sure that I'm coming up with like the best solution or, way to act on it. So that way it's not like a hasty or impulse thing where you're like, you know, I think if you react to things quickly, you're likely to screw up twice, where you really need time to like decompress and think it through, run through the scenarios. And then I approach it head on, quite honestly, like, and I have no issues owning up to my shortcomings or mistakes, because I think they're so powerful at the same time. Like I, you know, I'm not going to do that again, you know? And I found too, like, which is crazy, like, well, it's not crazy, but I think it was one of those like fears that I had years ago, is that like people are so cool with you messing up as long as you admit it and you fix it. Like, you know, we're all human. We're not going to do everything perfect all the time. And it's completely unrealistic to expect that of yourself or anyone else for that matter. And I think people appreciate you owning up to making a mistake or owning up to dropping a ball. They just want to know that you're there for them and you're going to make it right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Number four, what one trait or habit is most responsible for keeping you on track?
Working out. It is for me, like working out is my kryptonite, like whether it's going to I can't go to the gym right now, but, you know, running or doing boot camps, whatever it may be, like that 20 minutes or hour in my day is non-negotiable. There is not one day that goes by where I do not work out or walk, right? One of those things. And it allows me time to decompress, to think, and it keeps me feeling good and healthy. And so when my body feels good, my mind feels good. And so for me, everything has to be in balance, right? Mm-hmm. And so that is the one thing that I know I can attribute to my success, to my discipline and my energy, right? And how I feel. Like I am probably one of the most crazy strict people about like what I put into my body, and keeping that discipline in terms of working out and keeping that routine.
Mm-hmm. And I love too that your workout routine, A, that it's non-negotiable, but B, in a way that a lot of other people don't work out, you like take a break in the middle of the day to work out. And it's not always like first thing in the morning or, you know, when you go home, you're just like, nope, middle of the afternoon, I'm doing my thing, you know? And I think there's a lot of people, especially people who work in offices, who are like, oh my God, I would never go and like get all sweaty in the middle of the day. Like, no, I'm doing that, because yeah, otherwise I don't have another 4 hours to work in my brain, you know?
Yeah. No, I totally do. I take breaks all the time, and my favorite time to work out is like 4:30. And so like I'll work out for an hour, and then I'll run the rest of my meetings like in gym clothes. And again, that came with like, take me as I am, you know? And if you don't want to work with me because I'm showing up in gym clothes versus like a suit, like you're not my people, right? Because I'm seeing you late at night because I'm allowing it to fit into my lifestyle, because I gave myself the grace to work out earlier. And I think we're so afraid to let those things happen and make excuses for ourselves. Like we don't have time for stuff, when in reality, you just have to make it a priority. Like make it a priority and people rise to those expectations. Like, I warn people, hey, if you book a meeting at 7 o'clock, it's Zoom or I'm in sweatpants, like pick your poison, right? And so if you want to meet with me, you're going to accept it. And I've never had a person who wasn't cool with it, you know? And so I think it's just important that we allow ourselves to make us a priority, but then it also inadvertently allows us to truly show up for the people we serve.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I love that. And I think it also like kind of, it makes people feel less intimidated too, that you're like, I'm a real person and like, I'm not always wearing makeup and I'm not always like dressed to the nines and like looking, you know, like I'm set up for you, you know, you're just like, sure. This is me, you know, take me or leave me. That's what you get. Yeah. I think people really relate to that a lot. And I think that's awesome. Number five, what's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten? And what advice would you give to other people?
So this has been said a few different ways to me, but it's still the best is own the suck. And that can be said in terms of dare to suck, own the suck, accept the failures, however you want to do it, right? And for me, that I got that advice from a few different mentors and coaches. They all said it the same to me. And they're like, you just have to own the fact that you're going to suck, right? When you're trying new things, when you're stepping out of your comfort zone, when you're getting uncomfortable. And for me, I am such a slow learner. Like it took me so long to realize like, it's okay to fail, Nicole. Like it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to like, you know, just try new things, because if I don't do that, I'm never going to grow and evolve. And so, that was literally the best piece of like business advice, right? That I ever got was just like, it's totally okay to suck and just show up, right? And just show up. And the best personal advice that I ever got was to just be me. Like, why are you so why are you trying to be everybody else but you? Right. And so it was like that combination of authenticity and then dare to suck, right?
So what advice would you give to other people?
The same, like be authentic and dare to suck. Like if you want to be successful in business, you have to accept the fact you're going to fail a lot, because there's no way you can be successful without many failures. And so the minute that you can accept the fact that you're going to fail is that same minute that you're going to start getting closer to success, right? Because success is just built on like this landfill of all these little mini failures of trial and error and working through what works. And then I think if you're going to show up authentically and be yourself, you're going to be stepping into a space where you're happier and people see you better. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so if you show up as you, you have no competition, because you're only speaking to the people who love and respect you. And you're speaking to the people the same way. You're on the same wavelength, you know? And I think that's so true. And especially small business, like if you're a small business owner, you don't have the privilege to be an Amazon and to be anonymous and to just be everything to everyone. Like you have to make your footprint and you have to have a brand, and that brand is you and what people say about you when you're not in the room. And people know when you're not being real, like they can smell it from a mile away, you know? And the last thing you want is to like be one person at work and then be out with your buddies and be a totally different person and a client sees you or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that the best advice that I got is going to be my advice for other entrepreneurs.
For sure. I mean, I know that that's definitely one thing that I have going for me in my business for sure. Is that people
definitely do.
Really you out there. Like that's totally you. And you know, they're like, what am I going to find when I look on your Instagram? I might find a funny video, and I might find a picture of your kids destroying your house, and I might find a picture of you actually physically making something. And like all of that is what it's really like at my company. And it's been funny doing these interviews. Cause I've definitely interviewed a couple of mompreneurs already. And one of the interviews, like her kid was just like chilling and making noise the whole time. And she was like, are you going to have to edit this out? I'm like, hell no, that's your real life. Like, you know, it's trying to figure out a way to work and be productive while a little kid is like, you know, asking you to like answer a pretend phone. Like that's just
absolutely.
How it is.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Real life.
Yeah.
A single interaction has the power to change your life forever. This is a place for the stories of those moments. Stories of pursuing dreams, overcoming tragedy and failure, of coming back to life after so much of what feels like dying, of continuing on with only a vision as a map. This is the place where those moments live on. Come sit by the fire, look up at the stars, and be forever changed too.
Thank you for being with us on the Reach the Stars podcast. Our theme music is generously provided by Byrocratic. You can find him on Bandcamp.com. Thank you to all of our current patrons, guests, and everyone else who helps make this dream a reality. We are so proud to be building this amazing community with all of you. If you love this podcast, please consider sharing with a friend, leaving a review on iTunes, and becoming a patron at www.patreon.com/reachthestars. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel to see the videos of these conversations. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, do something cool and tell us about it.